amount of awkwardness there might have been between them vanished in an instant as they settled into their typical roles of captain and advisor. "The lightest of foot will proceed ahead of the rest of the company, testing the ice."
"Aye," Halsted agreed. "And we stick to the eastern edge of the lake, where the ice will have formed the earliest and the thickest.
Any sign of breakage, and we make haste for the shore, no questions asked. Then we vote again."
As it turned out, the precautions were hardly necessary. Even at its thinnest point, the ice was as thick as the wingspan of the tallest man in the company, and there was little chance of breaking through so long as they remained spread out. The company's spirits rose as they made good progress across the lake, which was as vast as an ocean, stretching all the way to the horizon, where the frozen waters seemed to drop off the face of the earth. As they travelled further north into the hinterlands, copses of trees began to spring up on the edges of the lake. The trees were similar to those they'd seen bordering the mournful mountains, some form of pine, but growing closer together, almost intertwining, as if huddling beside each other for warmth. Their nettles were different, too, longer and silver rather than green, as if they'd been painted that colour by centuries of never-ending snowfall. Their branches were also thicker than those of a normal pine, made to withstand the weight of the snow and ice piled atop them without bending or breaking. During a rest day, Heinrich and a few of his more curious men wandered off the ice to inspect them.
"No cones," Heinrich said, squinting up at the branches.
It was true. These pines were just trunk, branches, and nettles, nothing hanging from their boughs.
"I wonder how they spread their seed,"
Horace said. He was the company transcriber, writing tales of all their adventures. Heinrich enjoyed this aspect of exploring, learning about new places, new plants, new animals. So long as they didn't try to eat him, of course, which unfortunately happened more frequently than he'd like. But now wasn't the time.
"Once we've found the end of this forsaken lake, we'll have plenty of time to inspect the flora and fauna," he said.
Grudgingly, they moved back onto the endless sheet of ice and continued their march. At night, they camped right on the ice. Cook fires were built parallel to the camp on the snowy shore. Several of the more enterprising men would usually move away from camp and find a spot to drill a hole big enough to fish through. And each night they would return with dozens of large spotted fish with surprisingly white meat that flaked away when cooked. Heinrich relished every moment as they marched for a fortnight across the ice. Then a second fortnight, with still no end in sight. Until the ice ended.
"What do you make of it?"
Halsted asked, as they stared at the reality spread out before them. They stood on shore, having left the ice, and, despite Heinrich's previous promise, trudged along the edge of the lake until they reached the point where the ice was melting, becoming a wide swathe of slush before giving way to white-capped water once more.
"It's odd," Heinrich said.
If anything, the air had continued to get colder the further north they'd travelled. If anything, the ice should have been even thicker here, not melting. Narrowing his eyes, Heinrich carefully picked his way down the rocks to the water's edge. He squatted, eyeing the sludgy water, peeled off a glove, and rolled his three thick layers of clothing up to his elbow, dipped his hand in the water. The cold was a shock to his skin, but he bit his lip and shoved his hand in further, past the melting ice, until half his arm was beneath the surface, where it was
impossible.
It was warm.
"The hell?"
Heinrich muttered.
"What is it, Hein?"
Halsted called.
"Did your hand freeze off and float away?" "Aye."
There was no other way to explain it.
"The water is warm."
"Come again?
Did you say the water is warm?"
"I think you've gone numb in the brain, Captain." He shook his head. His brain did feel numb, but not from the cold. From this incredible discovery.
"Let's go a little further," he called. "And then I'm going swimming."
Heinrich didn't want to ruin the moment for his men.
"Let them experience it for themselves," he thought.
And then he started peeling off his clothes. There were murmurs of confusion, and several men echoed Alsted's opinion on how the captain's brain must have been numbed by the cold, but Heinrich ignored them. He also ignored the bite of the cold as it nipped at his pale skin, which was so dry and chafed that it was rough and peeling. He didn't care about any of that. All he cared about was stumbling out of his boots, bullying his way out of his trousers, his under-trousers, and his under-under-trousers, and then charging for the water's edge, which was now completely free of ice, even the slushy kind. With a boyish whoop, he leapt free of the shoreline, curling his arms under his bent legs until he resembled a large, fleshy ball. Sploosh! The warm water rushed around him, and he breathed hard out of his nose, bubbles burbling toward the surface. He kept his eyes open, and was shocked at the clarity. Looking through the warm blue water was as easy as gazing through a just-cleaned pane of glass. Brilliant green, purple, and red plants grew up from the bottom, their long tendrils almost reaching all the way to the surface. Hundreds, no, thousands, of fish moved in schools, feeding off the plants. Heinrich spotted several of the large spotted ones they'd been eating for the last fortnight. Out of breath, Heinrich bobbed back to the surface, a smile creasing his face as he burst into the cold air. On the shore, several of his men were already ridding themselves of their clothes, while others were tentatively dipping fingers in the water while wearing expressions of wonder and delight. One by one, they joined him in the water, laughing and splashing each other and dunking each other's heads. Heinrich felt younger than he'd felt in decades. More alive, too. He ducked underwater again and again, watching the fish play, trying to count the different species. They would have to compare notes later and create a catalogue, complete with drawings and approximate measurements. He popped up once more to find Alsted bobbing beside him.
"I discovered the source," he said.
"Source of what?"
"The heat. Follow me."
Alsted dove beneath the surface, and Heinrich followed, kicking his legs like a frog. Alsted swam deeper and deeper, past flora and sea life, until they reached the bottom of the lake. An odd-shaped rock formation rose up from the lakebed, formed like a cone, but lumpy along its edges. At the top of the cone was a spout of sorts, and from the spout arose an endless stream of bubbles. Heinrich was running out of breath, but Alsted gestured for him to place his hand above the bubbles, in a position that was still well short of the spout. He did, and was shocked to find not warm water, but hot water. Not boiling, but as he moved his hand lower, the water got even hotter. He suspected that just above the spout the water would scald him. He pointed upward, and Alsted nodded, and together they kicked back to the surface. By the time Heinrich emerged, his lungs were burning, and he was forced to gasp at the air for several minutes before he was able to speak. They told the rest of the men what they had discovered. The source of the warm water. Camped on the shore that night, the men were happy. It had been a strange, magical day, the likes of which they might never experience again. Heinrich wiped fish juice off his chin.
"We could build a colony here," he said. "Wait for a lull in the storms and march 1,000 hardy men, women, and children across the ice."
"They'll think we're taking them to hell," Alsted said.
"And then we'll surprise them with paradise,"
another man, Klein, said. Roars of laughter rolled across camp. Men ate, men joked, men laughed. They went to sleep happy, their bellies full and feeling warmer than they had in days, as if the warm waters of the not-so-frozen lake had melted the ice in their bones. Heinrich awoke the next morning to shouts.
"Klein's missing,"
Alsted explained, when Heinrich joined several early rising men in the center of camp. The sky was still murky, the sun having not yet cleared the horizon. One by one, groggy men were emerging from their tents, aroused by the commotion.
"Kleiner, you buffoon! Where in frozen hell are you?"
a man named Josen shouted, scanning the lapping waters of the lake. Both Josen and Klein were original members of Heinrich's exploration company, even before the king had appointed them to his service. They were also best friends and tent mates.
"Joss," Heinrich said, "when's the last time you saw him?"
There was no reason to panic, not yet. All of the men in the company were the curious sort. Klein might have just wandered off to inspect something he'd seen from afar.
"You know him," Joss said, approaching.
Though his grey eyes were focused, the concern was evident in the lines etched in his brow.
He don't sleep much, so at the arse crack of dawn he decides to go for a swim. I roll over and give him a kick out the door, because I don't care what he does, so long as he lets me sleep.
He could have finished his swim and gone for a walk, Heinrich suggested.
Josen held up an armful of clothes that Heinrich hadn't noticed.
Then he's doing it buck naked, freezing his manhood off.
A wave of fear rolled through Heinrich, but he swallowed it down. It was still too early to jump to conclusions.
He's a strong swimmer. He might have attempted to cross the lake.
'Tis possible, Alsted agreed. He likes to be first to do such things.
Joss said,
I've been watching the water for a while. Haven't seen so much as a splash. He'd have to come up for air sometime. And if he were swimming, I'd see him for sure.
Get something to eat, Heinrich said. We'll continue the search.
Not hungry. I'll search with you.
Heinrich wouldn't stop the man from searching for his best friend. Plus, the more eyes and ears, the better. He quickly organized the men into four groups of nine, with the three remaining men assigned to hold camp and prepare breakfast, in case Klein returned on his own. One group headed north along the shoreline, one south, the third inland, and the fourth, which was comprised of the strongest swimmers, shucked their clothes and set out across the water. There were two rules for this search. First, never go off alone, and second, return to camp before the sun reached its peak. Heinrich, who felt as comfortable as any of his men in the water, swam out with his group of eight, moving slowly, ducking his head beneath the surface and peering through the water, looking for movement. Each time he popped up for air, he scanned the waterline all the way to the far shore, hoping to spy a splash. The water was as warm as the day before, but Heinrich couldn't enjoy it, not when one of his men were missing, possibly injured or worse. Instead, he focused on the task at hand. As the sun crested the horizon and spilled light across the lake, visibility became better, and the men were able to see all the way to the bottom. Myriad fish swarmed the bright plants, nibbling their breakfast from the marine foliage. They searched for hours, until the sun was approaching its apex, until Heinrich's fingers and toes were wrinkled like grapes left to dry in the sun. But still there was no sign of their lost comrade. Treading water, Heinrich looked back to shore, which was now a fair distance away. If he traced the rocky edge north and south, he could just make out the dark outlines of the second and third companies of searchers. Based on their body language and the fact that they were slowly moving back toward camp, he was certain they hadn't had any more luck. He couldn't see the fourth and final group, who'd moved inland and out of sight amongst the snowdrifts. He sighed, beginning to lose hope. His group of swimmers were spreading out more now, pairing up and casting a wider net.
"Over here!"
someone shouted, causing Heinrich's heart to feel as if it had leapt out of his chest. He quickly located the source of the shout. Brisby, one of the youngest explorers, waved his arms over his head in the water. Heinrich and the rest of his men swam toward him.
"Found this, stuck on one of the long purple plants,"
Brisby said as they approached. A waterlogged sock hung from his pale fingers.
"Damnation," Heinrich said.
Other voices echoed his response. Every man in the company knew this sock, because Klein rarely took it off. His lucky sock, he called it. A hideous article of clothing, originally striped red and white, but which was now so stained it appeared brown and grey. As they often did, the men gave Klein a good ribbing the day before when he'd refused to leave the sock on shore, instead swimming with it on. And last night he'd hung it by the fire to dry, before pulling it on again just before bed.
"He wouldn't have taken it off on purpose," Heinrich said,
trying to keep his voice calm. He was glad Josen wasn't with them. He'd been assigned to the inland search.
"Other than last night, when he needed to dry it by the fire, I've never seen Klein without it,"
Brisby agreed.
"If he got fatigued, he might not have noticed it was missing,"
Gunter, a scrappy man with a greying beard, suggested. Heinrich considered this, nodded.
"Klein was a good swimmer, but he could have underestimated the distance to the far side of the lake. If he got tired on the way back and lost his sock."
Gunter picked up the thread of thought.
"The current,"
he said, pointing southward. Though it was fairly gentle, Heinrich could see the way the water was moving in that direction. In fact, based on their positioning relative to the dark smudge and curling smoke that identify the location of their camp, they'd drifted with the current while searching.
"I'll check," Brisby said.
His fair hair and green eyes made the youngest explorer appear even younger.
"Go with him," Heinrich said, gesturing to Gunther.
Overall, they were the two strongest swimmers in the group, just a hair behind Klein.
"The rest of us will follow on foot."
Brisby and Gunther headed south, taking long, slow strokes, paddling the water behind them. Heinrich led the other six men back to shore, where they dried off and dressed. When he glanced back across the water, he was surprised at Brisby and Gunter's progress. They were already quite a bit further south. Austed and his party approached from the south.
"Any luck?" the rugged man asked.
"We found this lucky sock," Heinrich said.
"No sign of Klein, though."
Heinrich was certain the grim look on his best friend's face mirrored his own.
"Shite,"
Austed said. Then again.
"Shite."
"Brisby and Gunther are checking down lake. You and me will follow on foot. We'll meet the rest of you back at camp. Get warm. Eat. Rest. Wait for our return."
Grudgingly, the rest of the men agreed and trudged off through the snow, their shoulders weighed down by the situation.
"Klein wouldn't take off his sock,"
Austed said as they started south at a brisk pace. Heinrich wanted to catch up with Brisby and Gunther before they got too far ahead.
"I know. What do you think happened?"
Heinrich refused to meet his friend's eyes, though he could feel them boring into the side of his head.
"It might have gotten snagged on a plant. He might not have even noticed it was gone."
If he was being honest with himself, however, Heinrich knew it was a lie.
"He would have noticed."
Austed nodded.
"Possible," he said,
though Heinrich knew his friend well enough to know when he was lying through his teeth.
"The current is stronger than it looks," Heinrich added. "Klein might have drifted south. If he did, Brisby and Gunther will find him."
"The ice is south,"
Austed pointed out. Heinrich had already thought of that, which was why time was of the essence. If Klein really was too tired to fight the current, he also might be too fatigued to cut a diagonal path back to shore, which meant he was in danger of being swept into the cold, sludgy waters they'd passed 2 days ago. If so, Heinrich closed his mind to the thought, refusing to give up. He'd lost men before, aye, but he'd never given up on them without visual confirmation, and he wouldn't now. Still, as he scanned the water, tracking the two swimmers' progress, Heinrich realized he was no longer searching for the telltale splashes Klein would be making if he were swimming. No, Heinrich was looking for a floating body. Midday arrived. Heinrich's stomach ached with hunger, but he ignored it. He and Austed had eventually passed the swimmers, moving ahead to meet them further south. He planned to check the sludgy ice flow for Klein. With any luck, the man was stuck in it, still warm enough to survive with a little help. While Heinrich looked across the water, Austed combed the rocky shoreline for any signs of the missing man. Suddenly his friend buckled at the waist, dropping to one knee.
"Oh, no,"
he said. Heinrich hurried over, assuming the older man was fatigued, perhaps dehydrated. He uncapped his water skin and held it in the man's direction.
"Drink,"
he said. But Austed only shook his head, his eyes cast downward. Frowning, Heinrich moved around him and followed his gaze. Dread roiled through him like a bitter potion. His legs felt rubbery, but he managed to stay upright. He closed his eyes, but the image was burned in his mind, pulsing red and yellow. A pale leg, a ragged stump, having been removed from the body by something sharp and jagged, leaving only torn flesh and cracked bones at the point where it was severed. They'd found Klein, or at least what was left of him. The icy wind whipped across Heinrich's face, stinging his eyes. His legs churned beneath him, burning from the effort. A faster runner, he'd left Austed behind in his haste. He did his best to follow his own footprints in reverse, where the snow was the most packed and easy to traverse. As he ran, he scanned the water for Brisby and Gunther. He needed to warn them before it was too late. After what seemed an eternity, he found Gunther. Naked, he was crouching in the snow, his head in his hands. Unprotected from the cold, his entire body was shaking. One of his legs was covered in blood, pooling at his feet. Heinrich could just make out a long, dark scratch running along his skin, weeping blood. There was no sign of Brisby.
"Gunt," Heinrich said, slowing to a stop. "Are you hurt? Where's Briz?"
The man's body jerked like he'd been struck by lightning. When he looked up, tears sparkled in his eyes. Rivers of grief had frozen on his cheeks and in his speckled beard. Heinrich had mistaken his shaking for shivering, but it was his sobs that had racked his body.
"So much blood," the man said through cracked lips.
His eyes held a haunted quality that scared the frozen hell out of Heinrich.
"Dead! The lad is dead!"
It was like a punch to the gut, and it took all of Heinrich's strength not to stagger to his knees. He wanted to ask the man what had happened, what he'd seen, but that couldn't be the priority, not now. Instead, he stripped off his thick greatcoat and wrapped it around Gunter, pulling it tight across his chest. Through the coat, he rubbed the man's arms up and down, trying to force warmth back into his flesh. Then he wrapped his scarf around his injured leg, tying it tightly to stem the flow of blood. When Alsted arrived, he offered Heinrich a concerned look, but didn't ask any questions, shucking off his outer trousers and helping him pull them onto Gunter's legs, over the makeshift bandage. They each sacrificed a pair of socks to warm his feet. Then, together, they carried him in silence back to camp. Exhausted from hours of swimming and perhaps from shock, Gunter curled up and slept for a long time by the fire. It wasn't a restful kind of sleep. The men watched him as he twitched and jerked, occasionally crying out. The men ate, drank, and spoke in low tones, speculating on what might have happened. Heinrich wouldn't talk about any of it, not yet. The only thing he would say was that it wasn't safe to go back in the water.
"Carver told me you found Klein's lucky sock,"
Josen finally said, easing down next to Heinrich.
"We did,"
Heinrich said evenly.
"Oh."
There was a question in that word.
"Do you think he's still alive?"
Heinrich hated this. It was all his fault. He'd been so stubborn, pushing north when even nature itself was warning him not to go. If he'd only heeded Austed's advice, two good men would still be alive. Every instinct spurred him to protect Joss from the truth, but he couldn't lie to him. He couldn't lie to any of them.
"I'm sorry," he said, resting a hand on the man's shoulder. "He's gone. The same thing that got Briz, got Klein."
The man nodded calmly, as if he'd already known it. He stood up, walking over to his tent, the one he usually shared with his best friend. He ducked inside and closed the flap. Gunter stirred in his sleep, and then his eyes flew open. A moment of confusion seemed to pass across his face as he looked first at the fire, and then at the bedraggled group of men sitting around him. Then, as if resigned to the reality he'd woken up to, he settled his head back into the crook of his arm, staring into the crackling flames.
"Briz was a hero," he said after a few moments of uneasy silence. "He saved my life. Gave his own for mine. Should have been the other way around. He was younger, had more years ahead of him." "One life isn't of greater value than another," Heinrich said.
The moment he said it, he knew it wasn't fair for him to say that. After all, he valued his son's life above his own. His men's lives, too. He wished it was he, and not Klein and Brisby, who'd been taken by whatever swam in the depths of the lake.
"His was," Gunter said. "Why is it that the heroes always die?"
Heinrich had no answer, though he suspected that it was because heroes always ran toward danger, rather than away from it.
"What did it look like?" Carver asked. "The thing that got them. The thing that carved up your leg."
Gunter shook his head, but it wasn't a refusal to answer. It was a shake of fear, as a memory was unleashed like a wild animal.
"We were swimming along, searching. The thing was smart, attacking from behind. We never saw it coming until it was too late."
He paused, licking his lips. but no one interrupted him.
I felt it brush by my leg, all rough scales and strength. Then I felt the pain, like a red-hot poker shoved under my skin. Don't know if it was a warning blow, or if it was just tasting me. But before I knew what was happening, Briz was shoving me out of the way and screaming for me to swim, and diving in front of me just as it came up, rising from the water like a monster of the underworld, its skin as dark as tar, with red eyes and a mouth full of long, curved fangs as long as my forearm if they were an inch. Those jaws opened so wide, the beast could have fit both of us inside. But Briz had knocked me far enough away that it could only grab.
He bit back the last word, breathing deeply.
I swam like I've never swam before. I'm not ashamed to say it. Briz was already gone, and I wouldn't waste his sacrifice. I don't know if the thing was full or bored of me or what, but I made it. Somehow, I made it to tell this tale.
Heinrich stooped down.
There was nothing you could do. I hope you know that. You were searching for Klein, risking your own life. You're a hero, too. Which means heroes don't always die. Otherwise there'd be no heroes, and yet here we are, in the presence of an entire company of them.
Gunter pursed his lips, but didn't respond.
I got something to say,
Carver said. For many years the small, thin, ginger man had been like the mother of the company. He was always fretting over whether the men were dressed warmly enough, whether they were eating enough, or drinking enough, or sleeping enough. Though the men often japed about his manhood, which was as small as he was, they all knew he was as much a man as the rest of them.
Klein was me friend, ain't no mistake. Once he confided in me that without the company he would have probably been working in the Crimean mines, breathing in rock dust and hating his life. He told me we were his life.
Heinrich never knew the man had felt so strongly, and the story sent a warm shiver up his spine.
Thank you for telling us that.
Carver nodded. From there, other men began chiming in, offering their own stories about Klein and Brisby. Joson, whose tent was close enough to hear everything they were saying, eventually joined them, speaking last.
I loved Kleiner like a brother, he said. I was my mother's first, and she died bringing me into this world. My father was a drunk and couldn't find another woman any more than a steady job. I had friends, sure, but none like Klein. He liked to say that regardless of whom our parents were, the same blood flowed through both our veins.
No one said anything for a long time after Joss fell silent, everyone content to watch the flames eat their way through the criss-crossing pyramid of wood. One by one the men slipped away from the fire, going to bed, until only Heinrich and Austed remained.
What the hell are we going to do?
Austed asked. Heinrich knew these men were strong, capable of dealing with great tragedy and moving on. But sometimes even the strongest of men needed something to distract their grief.
We're going to kill the monster, he said. Nobody goes into the water, except to bathe and warm up in the shallows. Even then, there will always be a spotter on the shore. Vigilance is paramount.
The men nodded in agreement.
Good, Heinrich said. Now, are there any suggestions for how to kill it?
What?
Carver said.
Did I mumble? No, but you can't be serious. That thing, that monster, killed Klein and Brisby.
Your point?
It's dangerous.
So are we. We fought the great ocean crocs in the Crimean Sea. Faced northern grizzlies in the Anzac Mountains, squared off against flocks of flesh-eating bone eagles in East Zion. We've fought monsters before.
This is different,
Gunter said.
You didn't see this thing.
The only thing that is different is that this monster killed our friend.
We don't even know if it's the only one of them,
Gunter said. Carver had cauterized the wound and bandaged it tightly to prevent infection. Other than that, the man was no worse for wear, though Heinrich had noticed him staring off into space a few times, presumably seeing images only his eyes could see.
You think a large predator like that would be willing to share its leg with another? It could have a mate, or children. You want to face a monster brood? For what purpose? You'll only get more of us killed.
His words stung, but Heinrich had already made up his mind. They hadn't come all this way to give up the warm waters of the lake. He would colonize this land, and to do so they'd need to rid the land and lake of the most dangerous predators.
That monster will kill again. Maybe not me, or you, or any of us. Maybe not anyone we know. But someday, explorers like us will happen upon this very lake, and they will die because we did nothing. Do you want their blood on your hands? I don't.
One by one, he could see the agreement in their eyes. Even Gunter and Carver grudgingly came to terms with the notion. Though Gunter had one more question.
How? First, we need some bait, Heinrich said.
The bait was an elk they managed to bring down on the tundra. Heinrich could see the way the men stared longingly at the fresh meat, but he refused to give in.
"Tonight we'll be feasting on roasted lake monster," he declared,
earning a chuckle from the men. It broke the tension and raised the mood, something he'd learned to do years ago. Happy explorers were the hardest working. Using rope, they fashioned a harness of sorts around the dead animal. The rope wasn't meant to do anything but hold the bait. They fully expected the monster to chew right through the rope, the meat, the bones, everything. Which was why they planted their hook, a long hooked barb usually used to attach to cargo sleds that were then pulled across the ice, deep inside the elk's chest cavity. The hook was secured to linked steel chains they'd removed from the cargo sleds. They had to connect every single one of the chains they possessed to make a single tether long enough to feed out into the water. It was a risk, Heinrich knew. If they lost the chains, they wouldn't be able to carry nearly as much food with them for the rest of their expedition. Finally, they built a small wooden raft of sorts, which they attached to the fresh meat. They would push the raft out into the water, and the meat would dart through the water beneath the dirigible, hopefully tempting the murderous monster to make an appearance. With any luck, it would eat the bait whole, swallow the hook, and then the real fight would begin. Heinrich was most worried about this part. Landing an impossibly large lake monster wouldn't be the same as fighting a normal-sized fish. It would take all of them to haul it in, and that still might not be enough. As a precaution, they secured the end of the chain to one of the metal cargo sleds after removing its runners. Then, using 10 men to a boulder, they rolled the largest stones they could find on top of the sled. It was the best they could do for an anchor, and Heinrich was optimistic it would hold. The entire setup took the better part of the day to achieve, and now they were all anxious to test it out.
"Think it'll work, Captain?"
Halstead asked, as they watched several of the men manhandle the elk carcass over to the water's edge. 3 men trailed behind them, unspooling the coil of metal chain.
"It had better," Heinrich said. "Otherwise we might have a mutiny on our hands."
He was joking, but Halstead didn't laugh. Heinrich wondered if there was more truth to what he'd said than he thought. Finally, the men waded waist-deep into the water, while the others watched for any sign of danger. With a great heave-ho, they shoved the raft as far out into the water as they could, before swiftly retreating to the safety of dry ground. Heinrich held his breath, watching as the raft slowly bobbed out into the lake, dragging its cargo somewhere beneath the water's surface. It caught the current, starting to turn to move downstream and back to shore.
"Damn," Heinrich said.
The rest of the men groaned as the waders ran along the shoreline to retrieve the raft, which had gotten stuck on a jagged, protruding rock.
"What now?" Halstead asked. "Someone's got to take it out further," Heinrich said.
Halstead laughed, as if it was the funniest thing he'd heard all day.
"Good luck finding a volunteer for that job."
Heinrich stared out into the water, eagle-focused.
"Good thing we don't need to find a volunteer."
"Why not?"
"Because we already have one."
"Who?"
"Me."
The warm water sent a thrill through Heinrich's body, lapping against his shoulders and chin as he clung to the raft. He kicked as gently as he could, doing his best not to draw attention to his movement into the lake. He wore dark, tight underclothes, which he hoped would make him less visible than his pale skin without hindering his speed too much. Still, he could easily see his churning legs beneath the water, which almost certainly meant the monster would be able to see them too. The thought made him want to turn around and swim back to shore.
"Just a little further," he thought.
He didn't look back, though he sensed the anxious stares of his entire company of men on his back. The sun seemed to be following his progress east, another silent spectator to whatever was about to transpire. Finally, Heinrich hazarded a glance back to find he was a respectable distance from shore. He hoped it was far enough to prevent the current from dragging the raft back against the rocks. He prepared to give the raft one final shove before turning around. His men started shouting. A bubble of panic burst in his chest as he whipped his head around to find his men screaming and waving and pointing at something in the water.
"Shite, shite, shite!"
he thought as he spun back around. What he saw sent a quake through his entire body. A line of white water was being pushed to either side, forming a V that trailed away toward the opposite shore. Something dark and scaly was at the apex of the V, sliding as easily through the water as a knife through soft butter. A thick hump rose up, attached to a head, larger than three men lying end to end, enormous red half-sphere eyes roaming hungrily across the water. The monster was headed right for him. Heinrich didn't think, just acted. Though his body was urging him to
swim, swim, damn it!
He went against every instinct, instead climbing aboard the makeshift raft that wasn't designed to hold the weight of a human. It bucked and writhed under his awkward weight, but he managed to keep his balance until it steadied. He looked back to find that the monster had cut the distance in half and seemed to be gaining speed as it closed in on its prey. Him. Using small movements, Heinrich unsheathed the only weapon that had been small enough to carry with him out into the water, a small but sharp paring knife. It would be useless in direct combat against the creature, but he could use it to buy him some time. He went to work on the ropes that secured the bait to the raft, sawing them away at each corner. When he'd cut away the last tether, the raft rose higher in the water as it released its underwater cargo. But it was too late. The monster was upon him, so close that he could see his own reflection in the glassy red eyes, which seemed to not only be staring at him, but staring through him, into his soul. Those eyes were ageless, timeless, ancient. That was the only way he could describe them later, like they'd seen everything from the beginning of time. He didn't stand a chance. Heinrich prepared to spring as far away from the raft as possible the moment the monster struck. Adrenaline coursed through his veins as the eyes closed in, and then vanished beneath the surface. Heinrich blinked, uncertain what to do. If the monster chose to come up from beneath him, he'd be swallowed in a single bite. Should he abandon the raft now, take his chances swimming to shore? But what if the monster was going after the bait? On shore, his men's shouts changed from those of warning to excitement. Fear, too, but mostly excitement. The metal chain burst from the water, going tight. Austed was forced to dive out of the way to avoid getting slashed in half by the steel links as they snapped back and forth like a snake's tail.
"We've hooked it," Heinrich thought,
his fear swiftly replaced with exhilaration. Momentarily forgetting his own plight, he watched as his men leaped into action. As planned, 10 of them threw themselves on the chain, engaged in the most epic game of haul the rope the world had ever witnessed. They dug their heels into small divots they'd cut into the snow for this very purpose, leaning back against the weight of the monster as it fought them. The sled, even without its runners and weighed down by several enormous boulders, began to slide toward the water.
"No!"
Gunter yelled, jumping dangerously in front of it with a dozen other men. They planted their own feet and pushed against the weight, stalling its progress. The 10 men on the chain tired and were replaced by 10 more men.
"The plan is working," Heinrich thought,
as his men settled into a rhythm, taking turns on the chain and holding back the sled. One group was always resting while the other two toiled. They all knew it could take hours to tire out the monster, but they were prepared for that, their stamina strong after months of hiking through the mournful mountains and across the northern tundra. The monster was distracted, in a fight for its life.
Time to make my escape.
Lying flat on his stomach on the raft, Heinrich began to paddle for shore. He was halfway there when something changed. The chain went slack, causing his men to tumble backwards. Heinrich stopped paddling, watching as the metal links sunk back into the lake.
What in the frozen hell?
He searched the water, which was suddenly as still as he'd ever seen it. Had they lost their prey? Had the monster chewed through the metal? Or perhaps the hook wasn't planted deeply enough and slipped out? If so, would the creature swim far away? Or would it come back for him, for revenge? On shore, the men had righted themselves and began to pull on the chain, which offered no resistance as they reeled it in. Something stirred in the water, a faint ripple, moving straight for the shore. Straight for his men.
"Watch out!" he screamed,
instinct warning him that even on dry land they were the ones in danger, not him. Surprised, his men stared at him, uncertain of what he was warning them about. They looked around and behind them, as if expecting an attack from the land. That's when the monster struck. It burst from the water as close to the shoreline as it could get, its dark, sinuous body launching through the air, water spraying in all directions. Heinrich watched in horrified awe. Out of the water, the creature was strangely beautiful, its scales seeming to change colour, red, green, blue, gold, as they reflected the last rays of dying sunlight. Its tail was comprised of three large flippers, which seemed to flap, propelling it through the air. It was unbelievably long, perhaps the length of 20 men lying head to feet. Its head was humped, and Heinrich suspected it was bone hard. All of these thoughts spun through his head in an instant. His men scattered like an armful of dropped kindling, releasing the chain and diving away. One of them, however, Matthias, was too slow. The monster's open jaws landed on top of him, slamming his body to the rocky ground, snapping ferociously. With a powerful twist of its body, the beast turned and rolled back across the rocks, splashing back into the water and vanishing. Something bumped the bottom of the raft, throwing Heinrich off balance. He paddled for shore faster than ever, oblivious to the cries of his men as they righted themselves and urged him on. Another heavy impact shook the raft.
"Is it taunting me?"
He was close now, so close he could see the bottom.
"I'm going to make it. Just two more strong paddles."
One voice rose above the rest, ousted.
"Behind you, Captain!"
Heinrich didn't look back, instinct telling him there wasn't time. Instead of paddling, he rose rapidly to a crouch and then launched himself into the air, both forward toward shore, but also to the side. He felt the raft rise up behind him, whacking him in the ankle and then shoulder, knocking him into an awkward, twisting flip.
Goosh!
He hit the water head first with a powerful slap, water rushing around him, plugging his nose. It was disorienting, and for a moment he struggled to determine which way was up. A dark behemoth slid past, bits of shattered wood flurrying around it like brown snowflakes. Heinrich regained his wits, kicking hard for the surface, in the direction he hoped was shore. He came up gasping within arm's reach of the same protruding rock that had previously captured the raft. Though he grabbed the rock, there was no need, for his men were already there, tucking strong hands under his armpits and hauling him out of the water. They didn't lie him on the ground immediately. No, they'd all seen what the monster was capable of when it had grabbed Matthias, instead carrying him a distance back from the lake before settling him down in the snow. One of them was ousted.
"Captain, you all right?"
"Fine," Heinrich grunted, tasting warm water on his lips.
He was soaked to the wick, his underclothes clinging to his body like a second skin.
"Help me up."
Two of his men hauled him to his feet.
"You should rest,"
Ousted advised.
"I'll rest when I'm dead. We've got a battle to fight, and I won't sit on the sideline like an invalid. That bastard has taken three of our own, and I'll be damned if I'll let it escape again."
As it turned out, by his own words, Heinrich was damned. Because after a fight that lasted well into the night, until each and every man was exhausted to the point of muscle failure, The monster escaped, hauling the chain, sled, boulders and all, into the water with a splash. Twice it had attacked them again on shore, but they were ready for it, staying well away from where the monster landed each time. Frustrated and bone-weary, none of them spoke as they ate a brief dinner and collapsed in their tents, not even having the energy to mourn their latest lost comrade. For once, Heinrich was the first one up the next morning. His men were all fast asleep, a chorus of snores and breathing melting together in the otherwise still and silent pre-dawn hours. His eyes half closed, he stumbled to the fire pit and struggled to start a fire, something he hadn't done in a while.
"I'm spoiled by my men," he thought wryly. "I need to take part in all aspects of camp life going forward."
The thought made him laugh, considering the circumstances, but he quickly cut himself off, remembering Matthias.
"Sodding creature," he muttered,
tossing his flint aside when it, once more, failed to produce so much as a spark or wisp of smoke. Now, more than ever, he wanted to see it dead. And yet the thought of potentially losing another man in the process was more than he could fathom. More awake now, he wandered down toward the lake's edge. He froze, gawking at the shadow that fell over him.
"Impossible. I'm dreaming. I never woke up. I'm still in my tent, fast asleep."
He approached the enormous carcass of the dead monster, its scales beginning to shimmer as the sun peeked over the horizon.
"We did it. Somehow. Some way. We killed the bastard."
He ran a hand over the rough scales, shocked at how hard they were, each scale like an individual plate of armor. He was looking at the tail moving back to front, the top of the sea creature's humped head towering over him like the misshapen spire of some eccentric's castle. Something's not right. Yes, they'd certainly tired it out to some degree the previous night. Yes, they'd hooked it and forced it to drag chain and sled into the water. But they hadn't inflicted any real damage on the beast. And even if they had, would it really have become disoriented enough to swim back here in the night and beach itself directly perpendicular to their campsite? What were the odds? 1 in 1,000? More like 1 in 1,000,000. Yet the truth was in the giant monster carcass resting right beside him. As he came around to face the beast, he was hit by the truth in the form of its burned-out eyes and toothless maw. The dead flesh had been desecrated, the eyes removed by hot torches or pokers, the teeth pried out one by one. Taken.
"Someone did this. Someone who's not us."
"Captain?" a voice said from behind. Ousted. Behind him stood the rest of his men, having silently woken and wandered down to see what he'd found. Someone or something more capable of surviving in this wilderness had killed the lake monster. Of that Heinrich was certain. Still, he wasn't certain what message the locals were trying to send them, if any. He didn't want to make a rash decision, not when this might be the first step toward a peaceful alliance with the natives of the hinterlands.
"I was foolish to think this far north would be deserted," Heinrich said, "especially after we discovered the warm lake water. I was too focused on that thing, that monster."
He gestured to the mountainous carcass.
"It's all right, Captain," Carver said. "We all were. We don't fault you for it." "I know," Heinrich said, "and I thank you for that. But it's not all right. As your captain, I have to think more broadly about every situation. I have to be ready for whatever comes, no matter how far-fetched. Thus far I've failed you on this expedition, but I won't let that happen again. I want opinions, and then I'll make my decision." "It's a peace offering," Carver said right away. "Clearly someone was watching our failed efforts to kill the monster. Then they killed it for us and left us the meat. That's a whole lot of meat. It'll feed us for weeks. Why would an enemy provide us with sustenance?" "To confuse us," Alsted offered. "Or perhaps that thing's meat isn't edible or poisoned. Who knows?"
"What about the burned-out eyes?" Gunter said. "And the missing teeth?"
Heinrich nodded.
It was almost ritualistic. At least the eyes were. But the teeth, they could use them to make weapons.
Frozen hell, Gunter said. If I end up surviving that beast, only to end up impaled on one of its fangs.
He let the thought hang.
We should leave immediately, Alstead said. Our numbers are already too low. If whatever killed the monster comes for us in force, we won't stand a chance.
Heinrich was inclined to agree.
Anyone opposed?
No response.
Fine. We leave immediately. Head southward, hugging the lake so we don't get lost. From there we'll make our way back to the pass through the mountains. Men, we're finally heading home.
The men clapped at the decision. Heinrich knew it was the right one. The storm hit before nightfall.
The snow is as thick as Gunther's head, Alstead said,
shielding his eyes from the sideways snowfall with a broad hand.
Thicker, Gunther agreed.
Alstead chuckled.
We should make camp. We need to conserve warmth.
Heinrich agreed, especially because darkness was falling with the speed of an avalanche, but something about the decision didn't sit well with him. Ever since they departed earlier that day, he'd felt uneasy. Perhaps it was something he'd eaten, or the enormous lake monster carcass they'd left behind. Or perhaps it was his explorer's instinct, the very same one that had saved his skin more times than he could count.
"We push on," he said.
There were murmurs and grunts, but no one challenged the decision. Maybe they felt as uneasy as he did. Soon, however, Heinrich began to regret his choice. They quickly lost their bearings, the frozen lake to the east as snow-covered as the rest of the landscape. For all he knew, they were already walking on it. For all he knew, they were walking in circles. Their torches blew out from the wind or the cold, leaving them to travel in moonless darkness, barely able to see the man to their front or side. Still, they pressed on.
"What's that?"
Carver asked, shouting over the howling wind. Heinrich cocked his head, but couldn't hear or see anything. He peeled back his thick knit cap and the scarf wrapped around it so his hearing wasn't so muffled. He heard it. A beat, faint at first, so soft it could have been the pounding of his own heart, but growing louder with each successive instance. Thum, 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 thum.
"Sounds like drums," Alstead said,
echoing what Heinrich was certain everyone was already thinking. But still, having his thoughts vocalized, sent a wave of dread crashing through him.
"We're being hunted," he said.
In the dark, snow stinging their faces, they fled. Or at least tried to. The snow and wind fought them every step of the way, but they fought back, their muscles straining, their breath grunting from their lungs. Thum, 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 thum. The drumbeats were steady for a while, but then suddenly got louder, so loud they felt almost on top of them.
Thum, thum.
And then, just like that, the drum stopped. Heinrich raised his hand, and one by one his men halted, their breaths misting the air.
"Do you think we lost them?"
Carver asked. Heinrich put a finger to his mouth, listening. He heard nothing. He licked his lips, and it was like he could taste the air. It smelled of smoke and pine and something moist. As fast as he could blink, torches blazed to life all around them.
"To me!"
Heinrich shouted, his men automatically closing ranks around him until they were back to back like a human fist. The drum started again, but with greater urgency now. Thum, 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 thum. Something whistled from the darkness, a slash of silver. There was a gargling sound and Carver fell, a spear protruding from his neck. Three more slashes zipped at them, and three more men died.
"Down!"
Heinrich shouted, and they flattened themselves on the ground. Just in time, too, as a dozen more spears flashed past overhead. Heinrich could feel the fear, a knot ballooning in his stomach, but he pushed it down to a place of clarity where his senses heightened. He said,
"Anyone seen the enemy?"
Grunts of no all around.
"They're faster than us, and have the advantage of knowing these lands. They'll expect us to keep running, but that's not what we're going to do. We're going to fight back. On my mark, we charge toward that line of torches."
He pointed so it was clear the direction he meant.
Ready?
Aye,
the men said as one.
Now!
They sprang to their feet together, some stumbling, but all finding purchase and charging for the hidden enemy. Spears spun at them and men died. Heinrich didn't know how many, but it wasn't the time to count. He charged as hard as the rest of them, at the very front, until one of the torches was a mere stride away. He leapt forward, tackling the shadow that held the torch. It was skinny and hard and... a thick branch, planted in the ground. Something snarled, and he looked up. The creature was unlike anything he'd ever seen, with four enormous paws and a snarling, wolf-like snout. It was white from head to toe, its fur thick and magnificent. That's where things got strange. Something was on its back, a humanoid creature with hairy, exposed arms, and a broad chest bristling with spiked armor. Its bone-hard face was the shape of an upside-down triangle, and its eyes seemed too far apart. Wispy strands of long black hair fell to its shoulders. Strapped to its back were half a dozen spears, their silver tips rising over its head. All around Heinrich he heard cries of death, snarls, and loud roars.
"Uskar Nath Kalia,"
the creature in front of him said from the back of the giant wolf.
I don't understand,"
Heinrich said.
"Please, please spare my men. I am the leader. If you have to kill anyone, kill me."
The creature shook his head.
"Filth language. Been so long I almost forget. I speak you man to man. Yes, please. But first, stop the killing."
"I cannot," he said.
"What? Why?" "We have no leader. We choose what we choose."
Heinrich was desperate now, though he sensed it was already too late, the cries of his men getting softer and less frequent.
"We mean you no harm. We were leaving your lands."
"Too late. You broke our pact. You hunted great Matho. We kill to show you can be done."
"What pact?"
Heinrich wished he could stop asking questions, but his intellectual curiosity wouldn't allow it. And he knew if he stopped, he would hear only silence around him.
"All dead. All dead. My fault. I did this. Me. Southern filth shall not cross ice lake, shall not swim warm waters, shall not hunt great Matho. We didn't know. We are explorers."
The man or creature made a sound that might have been a laugh, though it made Heinrich cringe, like glass being crunched underfoot while a bird screeched.
"You explore death now."
Heinrich nodded. This was it. He wasn't afraid of death, only of not living. He had lived. That was more than many men could say when staring death in the face. He stood, unwilling to die on his knees. The wolf snarled and snapped. Its rider calmly reached back and slid a long spear from its scabbard, rested it on his shoulder, lifted it. Shots burst through the gloom. Heinrich's foe flinched at the sound, which rose up the moment he threw the spear. Heinrich lunged out of the way, an explosion of pain radiating from his shoulder. He looked up at the creature, who had dismounted and was standing over him.
"Where had the shouts come from? Are my men still fighting? Are they winning?"
"You have friend who come,"
the creature explained.
"Tell them leave north. Tell them never return. Rest of men dead."
Feeling ill, Heinrich watched the creature stride away, leaping atop his wolf and turning to leave. Shadowy figures flew past, wolves and riders following. The very last one shoved a spear deep into Heinrich's abdomen, causing his mouth to fly open as he spat blood across the snow.
"Has your back,"
the thing snarled.
"Southern filth."
And then they were gone. Heinrich lay there, in darkness, his face wet with melting snowflakes, tears, and blood. He watched a light approach, bobbing through the storm.
"The end comes for me."
He tried to get up to meet his fate head-on, the way he'd handled everything else in his life, but found he couldn't move. The light approached.
A dream,
he thought, as a face came into focus. A strong, dimpled chin. Dark, long hair. Piercing brown eyes. Unlit coals next to the torchlight.
My son,
he tried to say.
Thomas.
But it came out as naught but a wheeze.